So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Do you know that a girl can self-diagnose herself as transgender and from there walk into Planned Parenthood facility and start receiving male hormones with no note from a therapist or medical professional? It's not necessary. We'll be talking about that a little later on here on Trending with new trends among girls in college age and high school, and we should be pretty concerned about this. Again, no medical or professional intervention or note necessary. Girl can just say, I identify as transgender and start receiving testosterone. What are the side effects? Do we even know what they are? Why is this happening? We'll talk about that a little later on today on Trending. In the meantime, did you know that pheromones can actually impact the person you will date and possibly even marry? Do you know what pheromones are? Recent news has come out showing that Apple, are you an Apple fan? Do you send messages? Do you prefer green versus blue messages? If you are an iPhone user, you know what I'm talking about. I'm horrible. I complain about how when someone who doesn't have an iPhone texts me, the messages are the wrong color. They're green. Anyways, it's just a weird iPhone thing. I don't know. If you're like me, let me know. You can post something on Twitter and tell me how ridiculous I am. Or that you identify as an iPhone user and you're totally being fed this new, I have to be in the blue and not in the green. I digress. Apple has rolled out gender-neutral emojis, one of which including a gender-neutral Santa Claus. These are scary. And you know what's weird about this one? I'm looking at these images that are put up here. It looks like a kid at the same time as an adult, at the same time as a boy, yet with like dark black lipstick. And then there's a man, but it's supposed to be a woman with black lipstick and a suit. You know, that one actually reminds me, because there are a bunch of these gender-neutral emojis that they're rolling out. That one actually reminds me, the one in the suit is when like a woman or a man decides they want someone of the opposite sex to be their best man or maid of honor. And so they have the girl dress up as a boy and wear a suit, a tuxedo at the wedding. Anyways, this is just ridiculous. How far have we come on this transgender confusion? And are people really hurting from it? In fact, studies are showing that this is impacting young girls negatively, and we need to discuss it. Good news, however, coming out of San Francisco. You may recall a couple weeks ago, I had Archbishop Salvador Corleone here with me on Trending. We were talking about the battle there in San Francisco over the fact that they were still only allowed to have outdoor public masses with a limit of 10 people. 10 people. You couldn't even have 100 people, 200 people. Didn't matter how big your outdoor space was, 10 people. Now, Archbishop Salvador Corleone ended up organizing numerous public masses with multiple priests on the steps of the cathedral following the city guidelines, as well as Eucharistic processions, sending a clear message to public officials. In fact, the Department of Justice warned city officials that the restrictions that were placed on religious institutions could be considered unconstitutional. So the good news is this. Finally, churches in San Francisco are reopening. They're allowed to have up to 100 people for indoor worship services. This is incredible news in the face of outright blatant attack on Christianity and other religious groups where for some reason we've been some of the only groups not allowed to assemble. So great news, and I have to say, can I just turn to Archbishop Corleone for a moment and point to him as an incredible model and leader of Catholic leadership? We do not stand while Catholics continue to be persecuted, even here in the United States, for political reasons. Our faith is so important, reception of the sacraments is important, and we should not be quiet while Catholics are targeted. And so kudos to Archbishop Corleone for helping to make this change, for organizing Eucharistic prayer processions, and for organizing and being creative with the way he conducted public masses in order to bring people out into the streets to send a clear message to the government. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's great to be with you. It's always fascinating seeing the new mating calls that tend to take place on college campuses, at the mall, or wherever you might be, between men and women. I don't know about you, but it seems like many, many men and women are having a hard time relating to one another. In fact, we've seen a change in clothing trends. More skin is more popular now. We've seen a change in online dating apps, matchmaking programs. All of these complaints that people can't meet anyone, they're having a difficult time finding anyone who's interesting or marriable. Do you know what pheromones are and how they impact the person you will date and possibly even marry? Have you ever even heard of pheromones? Pheromones have to do with the way we relate to one another on a sexual, biological level. It's almost like this unsmelled but smelled character element in the human person that makes it so that people have on a biological level a complementarity. Now, it's really fascinating how this works. I want to unpack a little more. So the word pheromone is a combination of two Greek words, pheron, which means to carry, and hormon, which means to excite. So we carry these pheromones that are essentially meant to excite and elicit a response in the person of the opposite sex to ultimately lead to good child making, essentially. So they're usually produced from the armpits and pubic glands, actually. And it's fascinating when we look at what hormones are, because they essentially, if you look at the animal kingdom, this is like total TMI, but it is funny and fascinating at the same time. Pheromones are released specifically from pigs in the front area of their snout. And so say two pigs are feeding at the feeding trough and one female pig notices the pheromones in a male pig that are complementary and appealing. And we'll get to how that might be complementary and appealing. The female pig would then present her rump to the male pig to say, hey, let's get together, let's be a complement, let's propitiate the species. Okay, well, we might not quite be doing that as humans, but in a sense, we kind of are. Let's unpack some of the science of it. That's some interesting stuff from Israeli researchers coming out of the Smithsonian, among others. But essentially, this is how it works for men and women. Let's talk about women in particular here, and we're going to dive into the male side in a moment. Pheromones essentially work to complement with smell. Specifically here, we're talking about how we're looking for good immune system with genes that are not necessarily the same, but they're different so that they can produce the best biological makeup for offspring, the healthiest possible offspring. So we're looking for people who are different genetically from us to produce genetically healthy offspring. Now, at the same time, we're also looking for fertile elements in those pheromones as well, especially men. But you see, what happens when women are contracepting, who she's looking for actually changes because her body's in a state of pseudo-pregnancy. So normally a woman would be looking for someone who's different from her on a genetic level. But this is completely disfigured when someone's taking the pill because, again, their body's pretending often that it's pregnant. And so when women are pregnant, the people they tend to spend time with and interact with usually changes. They tend to be more comfortable around family, people who are safe, people who are similar to her, because she knows this is a safe environment, rather than being in the state, which she should be in when not married and having a child, of searching for a complementarity, someone to marry, someone who will create good offspring. You see, contraception makes women also less faithful and leads them to be more dissatisfied in sexual relationships with their partner. This is due to the lack of pheromone complementarity that's occurred. And so suddenly, sometimes people will be on hormonal contraception, they get married, the woman comes off of contraception when they've decided they maybe want to have a child, and all of a sudden she's looking at the person laying next to her and she's going, I'm not even interested in you. In fact, you might even smell bad to me because it has to do with pheromones. And there we are. We see part of the impact, yet again, of divorce numbers and the fact that people are not remaining together after they make this commitment to marriage or even after they have children. Now, on the opposite side, men find fertile women more interesting than non-fertile women. It's a law of attraction. It's fascinating. There have been studies done where they hook men's brains up to various technologies and they show them images of the most beautiful women in the world. Models, and I'm going to say objectively beautiful models because I have to tell you, some of the models and the hairstyles and things that we have anymore, I'm just a little confused by. That's all I'm going to say here. But objectively, very beautiful women. But what they do at the same time is they basically bring in exposure of fertile hormones or pheromones versus non-fertile pheromones to the men who are looking at these images. Listen to this. It didn't matter what the woman looked like. If the pheromones in that room, when the man's looking at the image, was fertile, meaning she could have a child at that time, if those pheromones were present, fertile pheromones, the man would find a woman objectively more beautiful and give her a higher rating. But if they were infertile pheromones that were present in the room when he was looking at these images, he would rate even the most beautifully rated women in the world on a lower level than a plain Jane who has fertile pheromones. So it's fascinating. How we relate to each other as men and women is actually impacted by pheromones, our ability to conceive or not conceive a child, and whether or not contraception, other hormones, are actually impacting our body. It's absolutely fascinating, and it also makes us ask the question, have we altered our biochemical makeup so much that it's ultimately led to this increased change in how we dress? Because we're trying to attract people rather than on a biologically complementary level, we're trying to attract people alone by how we dress, how little we wear, how we stand, how we push our body forward and back. I think it's quite fascinating to see, and we'll have to continue to unpack information on pheromones to better help you understand why this law of attraction hasn't quite been the law that's written into the natural development of the human body. You're listening to Trending with Timory. If you'd like to call in and have a question, the number is 1-888-914-9149, or you can always reach out on Instagram. Follow me by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending. If you haven't heard, we have a nativity giveaway and you have just a little more time. So many homes have had yards with signs on them displaying right now, leading up to the November elections, many things having to do with the races, but Relevant Radio wants to give you the best kind of yard sign that you can use year after year. By now, you've probably heard us talking about how we're giving away a nativity set to 200 lucky winners. We want to make sure you have yours in plenty of time to display it outside your home all throughout Advent and Christmas. To enter, all you have to do is head over to relevantradio.com/nativity to register. But hurry, you have to sign up by this Friday. Joining me today here on Trending, a new guest to our show, Father Nicholas. He's known on social media as the Frank Friar. In just a little bit, we're going to be discussing this new trend you may not be aware of, that girls can self-diagnose themselves as transgender and walk into a Planned Parenthood facility to start receiving male hormones. No note from a therapist or medical professional is necessary. We'll discuss that in just a little bit. Father Nicholas, the Frank Friar, is with us. We're talking about masculinity in the saints. And I want to unpack specifically Saint Jerome and how he's a model of masculinity. Welcome to the show, Father Nicholas.
Hello, how are you doing there, eh?
I'm doing great, thank you. Are you from Canada?
No, I'm from the Great Lakes State itself, Michigan, but I grew up right by the Canadian border, so we would, I say I'm Canadian light, you know, so.
I caught the A there. I was starting to wonder if you were Canadian.
No. But I do have fond memories, and I do, at least up until COVID, you know, go to Canada regularly, so.
I want to unpack St. Jerome. It's his feast day today. For those who don't know, he wrote the Latin Vulgate. It was truly his life work in interpreting the Bible from Hebrew to Latin. And he's known for the common phrase that we hear, ignorance of Scripture is ignorance of Christ. But something many people probably don't know about him, Father Nicholas, is that in many of his icons, he's depicted holding a large rock. Now, I think this is an incredible example for men in particular because this rock is a symbol of his self-mortification. Mm-hmm. And essentially, in talking about temptation yesterday here on the show and maybe those bad habits we picked up during the quarantine, we've learned that St. Jerome actually studied Hebrew as part of his penance in the state of temptation. What stands out to you about this state and his example of masculinity?
Well, one of the things that St. Jerome reminds us, first off, we have to know that, you know, he was a man with a temper, you know, and he was known to sort of be a hard-headed, angry kind of person, but he wouldn't make excuses for that. You know, we have different letters where he mentions this, and there's some lamentation, although he would slip back into it regularly, you know, so he committed himself to a life of some would say severe penance, but penance nonetheless. One of the images I myself always find quite interesting in relationship to St. Jerome is many of the different icons and images that have him in it is always accompanied, he's accompanied, I should say, with a lion, you know. And there's many sort of stories about how he befriended this beast and etc. But for men, seeing St. Jerome with the lion is of the utmost importance because men in their own way have this sort of inner lion within them, this tenacious beast, this massive amount of just amazing energy. You know, you spend a good amount of time talking about the human body and pheromones and etc. Well, testosterone is this profound sort of drug hormone that is just, you know, coursing through a male body. And, you know, there has to be a process of not domination, but of integration, of acknowledgement, of wrestling with, of incorporation, you know, not in an abusive sense, but in an integral sort of whole, to make a sense of wholeness. So, you know, if we wrestle with these images of Jerome with his lion and, you know, wrestle with the stories and his different writings and et cetera, it helps us, you know, as a witness to masculinity, the need to become aware of the own lions in our life and how we need to acknowledge them and to see them better and to integrate them, because men, we can get really focused in sort of objective ways on specific things in our life. You know, we're very task oriented. Not to say that women aren't task oriented, but just fundamentally speaking, you know, in masculinity as a whole, it tend to be task oriented sort of, you know, folks. And there takes a necessity of slowing down to get a bigger picture so we don't get lost by looking at a tree instead of taking in the beauty of a forest. So I always find that image of Jerome with his lion of the utmost importance in wrestling with the notion of masculinity, at least for myself.
I really love looking. I keep coming back to this symbol of the rock, and you talk about the lion as well, and how I think men can learn from this sense of self-mortification, even St. Jerome's anger problem. I keep thinking about the letters that were exchanged between St. Jerome and St. Augustine. I don't know that they ever met in person, but St. Jerome kind of had this attitude about St. Augustine. You know, both were kind of very, very active and involved in the church. St. Augustine was rather up and coming, and he was writing to St. Jerome, and Jerome just had no tolerance for him. I'll never forget when I was in studying theology in school, our professor would often read some of the letters between St. Jerome and Augustine, and they were pretty intense on the side of St. Jerome. So this anger was a problem, possibly even pride as well. And so his example of self-mortification, his example that he still became a saint in the face of these temptations, reminds us that we too need to have this level of self-denial and self-mortification in order to build that character. Because suffering purifies the heart. So what would you say are some of maybe the top couple of practices of self-mortification that you've grown to appreciate, Father Nicholas?
Well, for me, it is self-mortification. You know, it's sort of taken a new turn in my life. You know, I'm an amputee, so, you know, self-mortification, you know, pre-amputation, post-amputation, things have changed a little bit. But the necessity of always incorporating fast, not just fast in sort of food relationship, but becoming aware of where there are unhealthy attachments, you know. So one of the things I do regularly is I look at the screen time, for example, of my on my cell phone, and I see what sort of things I'm putting too much time into that I need to trim back a little bit. And I create a fast for that week, you know, as a means of mortification. So if it's certain social media platforms, I cut back on that. If it's a certain game, you know, although I cleaned all the games off, but there was a time where I'd play a certain card game, you know, I would cut it off, you know. So it's becoming aware of where there are unhealthy attachments to incorporate Carmelite language, because I'm a Carmelite friar, and mortifications are a means of addressing those attachments. So for me, it's the understanding the usage of my time and where I might be wasting time and what fast do I need to incorporate in order to preserve time so it can be an appropriate gift given over to God. Another thing is keeping track of where my eyes are wandering to, you know, finding, like, as I'm walking around the neighborhood, you know, seeing nice cars. You know, my dad built cars for a living, you know, and my eyes can be attracted to certain cars that are going by. It's like, oh man, wouldn't it be nice to drive a car like that? And I'm like, well, that's not appropriate for my way of life. I'm a friar, you know. Saint Jerome, that rock, it wasn't just that he carried this rock, is that this rock he used to sort of hit his breast, you know, because he realized that it was out of the heart that, you know, a lot of these passions would become inflamed. So, you know, what for myself, you know, sometimes when I'm walking, I'll have a little something in my hand that I can not prick myself with, but maybe push into my thumb, like a little crucifix, when I'm walking from the priory where I live at over to our office where I work at, you know. So if I find my eyes drifting because, you know, someone at the school parking lot has this nice, you know, Dodge Challenger or whatever, you know, I can just prick that, and I can wake myself up to what's going on with me mentally in that moment. Like, oh yeah, that's right, I'm being distracted, my eyes are wandering, you know. So those are two aspects of mortification right now in my life I've tried to incorporate. So
I really appreciate you sharing this, because we've been walking through the titles and the litany of Saint Joseph here on Wednesdays, really focusing on a male content, and he has this title in the Litany of St. Joseph, Watchful Defender of Christ. And when you talk about these self-mortifications and this awareness, you're talking about defending Christ within yourself and preserving that state of grace, overcoming temptation by being aware of, okay, what's going on with my screen time? Where are my eyes wandering to? And how can I grow? And it reminds me of 1 Peter chapter 5, where our first pope tells us to be sober and alert. He also uses the word in various interpretations, vigilant, because your opponent, the devil, is prowling around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And so how are we being watchful defenders of Christ?
Yeah, and that's funny. I always love that line, because St. Peter sort of depicts the devil in a foolish way, because a roaring lion will never catch any food. So it's also a reminder about how dull we can be, that we can't hear this roaring lion. So with St. Joseph, one of the things for a man to, for a boy to become a man, one of the fundamental things that he has to be able to do is he has to be able to sacrifice for the sake of love. You know, he has to be able to get to that point that he can hold something in such a high regard within his life that he's willing to give up his life, maybe not necessarily physically, but a variety of other ways. We see this also written about in Ephesians chapter 5. You know, where Paul says for a husband to be to his bride as Christ is to the church. So
that's the Frank Friar. Father Nicholas will be right back with the Frank Friar here on Trending with Tim Murray.
Day 23, Virgin Most Faithful, pray for us. Semper Fidelis, always faithful. That's the inspiring motto of the United States Marines, who are faithful to country, ready to serve and defend our country to the point of death. The Blessed Mother is always faithful to God, always faithful to Jesus, always ready to stand by Him in the hour of His greatest need. When all of the apostles have fled, except the youngest one, John, Mary is there next to Jesus on the cross, close to Jesus to the last. At the most humiliating moment in the life of Jesus, when it looked like his entire life had been a complete and utter failure, our Blessed Mother did not hesitate to stand at his side. A faithful woman makes her husband strong, and a faithful husband will never tolerate the least bit of disrespect for his wife. Virgin Most Faithful, pray for the Church and our nation.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
What's trending? There's a day for everything now. It's International Podcast Day, if you weren't aware. Twitter informed me. So here's my challenge to you to join the mission of trending. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast, head over to your favorite podcasting app or head over to relevantradio.com/trending where you can choose where you want to subscribe. Now, what I'd like you to do is I want you to share your favorite podcast episode of Trending. Let us know why you loved it, share it with your friends, and tag me, whether it's on Instagram or Twitter, and we'll repost it. We love to hear from you, what you like to hear discussed, what's changed your life, perhaps, about some of the topics we've covered here on Trending. So share in our mission by spreading the good news about our show, Trending. My guest today is the Frank Fryer. You can find him at thefrankfryer.com. It's Father Nicholas, and he recently read the book Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. Now, if you haven't heard about this book yet, I have to tell you, it's not receiving the adequate amount of attention that it should. Did you know that a girl can self-diagnose herself as transgender and walk into a Planned Parenthood facility and start receiving male hormones, testosterone? She doesn't need a note from a therapist or any type of medical professional. She can start on her own receiving transgender, cross-gender hormone therapy today. It's quite scary because even in, for example, the state of Oregon, I believe a girl at the age, yes, at the age of 15 in Oregon can give her medical consent with no parent approval. It's a little scary. It reminds me a lot of the non-consent laws. You don't have to receive consent to have an abortion in many states here in the United States. Listen, this is how the book came about because you have to know the background. Abigail Schreier is an opinion writer for the Wall Street Journal. She's progressive, and she's been written to by a number of people on the progressive side of parenting who support LGBTQ ideologies, but were concerned about their daughters. Specifically, her mom wrote in about a new trend, about how her daughter was totally fine, then she went off to college, and with a group of her friends in college, decided that she was suddenly transgender and started going through hormone replacement therapy. This has become a massive trend among young women in high school, in their college years, and it's scary because it has nothing to do with transgenderism. It's like it's a new anorexia. Father Nicholas, you've read the book. You've gone through the content, looking at what Abigail Schreier has put across here. What two or three things stood out to you most in this book?
One thing that stood out to me that's an amazingly positive thing within the book, and she keeps hitting it over and over again, is the great blessing. She doesn't use the word blessing, but a great gift, I should say, that about womanhood, you know, that the, you know, femininity and womanhood, that these are blessed and great and good and awesome and wonderful things, you know, and they need to be, it needs to be celebrated. But of course, she also says that it's not an easy thing. You know, the movement from girlhood to, you know, womanhood is a difficult process, just as the same is for a boy to journey into manhood. But she says that it's a good thing. You know, and she spends a lot of ink and a lot of time with that, You know, and another thing is she really gets into the nitty-gritty. A good chunk of the book is just her doing interviews with people that have come forward, that have reached out to her, and people that she disagrees with. So she uses her platform as a means of getting their voices and their experience out there in the world to help people to understand what's going on with this craze. Because she would use the word social contagion, that this is a social contagion that is being spread amongst teenage girls that is having some terrible effects and could end up possibly could, mind you, big thing here, could, kind of like we already have within the history of the United States of the lobotomy craze, where people's bodies are being decimated through a procedure that people find out, you know, a generation later was totally non-appropriate, non-medically beneficial, and et cetera. You know, we don't really have the science to support many things yet, and she is sort of shining a light. You know, one of the big groups that she really hammers, for lack of a better word, is the influencers, how the different people in YouTube and other social media groups are sort of pushing this ideological thing and pushing this social contagion and showing how young girls can know certain ways of speaking to get around certain things in terms of psychological barriers when they have to. In there, in certain states where they have to meet with a psychological professional in order to get drugs and et cetera, you know, or how to speak with their parents, or how to avoid certain ways of getting around their parents to be able to live their you know, perceived gender, to the point of how to utilize things at school so they can have one identity at school. If it's a little girl, it might be, well, I'm a boy now, and they might have one identity where they're quote-unquote living as a boy at school, and then their parents have no idea of what's going on, and everything that the parents get from school uses their child's original name that they gave them at birth, you know, and identifies them as a girl, and et cetera. So she really hammers the influencers that put out a way for children to sort of circumvent, or for different systems like our education system and our medical system to circumvent parents. That's one of the big shockers that I took from this book is how parents are really being undercutted in a variety of different ways in a variety of different states throughout the United States of America.
This is a scary thing that's occurring. It's an ongoing theme, which is really embedded in socialism. And we have to call it for what it is, this idea that the state should have ownership of your children, the state should provide the education for your children, the state should provide the activities for your children. This has been the massive change and even the influence here in the United States that kids are no longer being raised by their children, which is part of the reason why the Catholic Church has spoken out so blatantly against socialism, because it really, on the familial dimension, separates the child from the parent. But let's talk a little bit about these girls in particular who are suddenly self-diagnosing as transgender and now receiving testosterone with no medical or therapeutic intervention. Father Nicholas, these are girls who would usually are very smart. They often tend to be social outcasts, lonely, struggle perhaps with anxiety and depression. They don't quite fit in. These are the same girls who normally would turn toward anorexia or bulimia to kind of numb their pain. These are the same girls who tend to engage in self-harm, cutting, and even witchcraft. Yet the new trend, sometimes going along with some of the things I just mentioned, has been that instead, they're suddenly deciding with these friends groups that they're going to become transgender. And they've decided that if they were a boy, this is their quick fix. They need testosterone, and that's what will make them feel better. What did you see that stood out about the girls who are deciding to make this specific quote-unquote transition?
Well, one of the things that Ms. Schreier really hits in her book, and she hits this in several different places, is this testosterone can kind of be like a wonder drug for young girls, because testosterone is a you know, powerful hormone. And for one example that she gives, it helps with sort of the dispersion of fat around the system. So it can really help
right.
In terms of body-related self-identification, you know, that, oh, I'm getting fatter, for lack of a better word, and et cetera, things that might bring about an insecurity in a young girl's life, suddenly they can taste their testosterone, and it will really help to address that situation. And of course, you know, as a man, I can say, you know, having that testosterone gives you a certain bravado because of the nature of the hormone itself that can help to overcome some of the insecurity issues. So, you know, she talks about that as being a wonder drug, and she talks about how influencers really sort of perpetuate that stereotype. But then there's the darker side and the impact that having an increase of testosterone that's not being monitored, it's not being observed properly by medical professionals, it can really negatively impact certain aspects of the feminine body, like the, you know, their womb and sexual organs. It can cause certain atrophy-related issues that may not be something that can be repaired. One of the myths that she addressed in the book is, oh, well, you can stop puberty now and you can just restart it later. And that's just not the case. She has several different, and she does a great job in terms of her footnotes, providing the necessary evidence on these sort of things, you know, that, you know, we have to understand and be able to debunk these sort of quick thrown out slogans or views or et cetera, particularly when people say, well, that's the science, it's a settled science. Well, no, nothing is settled within this regard, you know, and fundamentally medicine is supposed to do no harm. You know, so before a course is to be taken, you know, we should know whether or not this thing is going to do harm, this procedure, this injection, this whatever is going to do harm. And if we don't know enough yet, then maybe we should hold off. So she does a great job in sort of hammering, for example, the impact of testosterone in terms of how it might be beneficial to a young woman's identity. But then the darker side of having a body flushed with that sort of hormone and how that might impact the feminine body.
And I can't emphasize this strongly enough. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timmy, and we're talking about the trend of teenage girls and college-age girls who are self-diagnosing themselves as transgender and with no need of any type of medical intervention, medical note, they are starting to receive cross-sex hormones, testosterone specifically. And what's scary is that there is not a clear study of the long-term impact of taking testosterone, nor are these girls who are going on testosterone being monitored. So you mentioned some of the side effects, Father Nicholas, that are laid out in Abigail's book. You mentioned the fact that the testosterone can redistribute fat, but it can also deliver the state of euphoria. It can suppress anxiety, which many of these young girls, this is one of their biggest problems, is that anxiety they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And it often makes them feel braver and socially bolder, as you talk about, part of that male characteristic because of testosterone. All of these things sound great, just like some of the things that sound great about taking hormonal contraception, not having a period. You also don't have that when you take testosterone in this way. It blocks puberty from ever occurring in these girls, from body parts, from functioning and developing how they're supposed to function. But no one's talking about that long-term impact of infertility, and risk of heart attack even. Go for it.
Oh, yes, heart attack's a big thing. And this is one of the things, too, is it sort of undercuts itself because, you know, within the LGBT thing, it's all about diversity. That's one of their big mantras is diversity. But in this regard, it sort of undercuts the notion that girls can't be tomboys. Like, there's something wrong with, you know, well, if you're a tomboy, that really means you're a boy. Well, no, there's a wide range of different aspects within the realm that we know as femininity, you know, and it sort of strips the possibility of young girls and women and et cetera of being what used to traditionally be understood as a tomboy, you know, and it says, oh, well, no, really, you must be, you know, you must be transgendered now. And that's something that she hits regularly throughout the book, too, is the loss of that aspect of, you know, girls living out their feminine identities.
That's Father Nicholas, known as the Frank Friar. I'm so grateful that you've been able to join us. I know that Abigail's book has had an incredible impact on you. Again, we've been talking about the book Irreversible Damage, the Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. If you'd like to follow Father Nicholas, the Frank Friar, head over to thefrankfriar.com. We'll be right back here on Trending to talk about how, when something's cloaked in civil rights, it tends to be that the society just goes with it. But we're not talking about the impact it really does have on those who jump on the bandwagon. We'll be right back.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I can't get over what is happening right now in the transgender movement. It is unbelievable. We've been talking about the book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters, written by Abigail Schreier. And what she shares in that book is something that she had no interest in discussing. She's even pro-transgender. However, she sees that there's this trend among young girls, teenage girls, where they're suddenly transitioning and receiving cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers with long-term impact, with no supervision. But this is what's scary. And this is something that Abigail said when I was listening to an interview that she did. She said, "We have a weakness for anything that is cloaked in civil rights." And it's true. It's true. People throw, this is a civil rights issue. And they compare it to the real civil rights movement. And it's such an injustice to the civil rights movement, but it's also an injustice now to those girls who we are doing science experiments and social experiments on their bodies without any oversight whatsoever. They don't know. We don't even know the long-term impact of taking testosterone. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory. And by the way, it's International Podcast Day. So I'm asking you, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast and then share your favorite episode of Trending. Let us know what you've enjoyed on the show, what topics specifically that have maybe changed your mind. And then tag me and we'll retweet or repost on Instagram those stories that you share from Trending. So let's talk about some of the stories that Abigail Schreier shares in her book, Irreversible Damage, The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters. She talks about a girl named Benji who decides suddenly that she identifies as a boy. Everyone affirmed her on social media as she was seeking out this affirmation about her transition. It was fascinating because if you don't know this, in the transgender community, people often refer to being your glitter family. As in, if you want to transition, if you want to do you, if you want to be a unicorn, if you want to be unique. By the way, I'm sitting here going, are you kidding me? The unicorn is kind of one of the symbols of the LGBTQ movement because you're unique, you're one of a kind, you can be whatever you want to be. You can be mythical and an imagination. Make up whatever you want to be. You do you. The phrase of relativism, right? You define your own reality. Well, people were supporting Benji, telling her, well, we'll be here. We'll be your glitter family where you can razzle and dazzle any way you want by transitioning. But then guess what happened to her? They started making requests of her after her transition, and they started asking her for photos. You know what I'm talking about. Because this is a social pressure that young girls are in today. They're nothing but a sexual object. And they're just a little more fascinating now because they've decided to so-called transition, whether it's through an actual physical mutilation of a sex change or through cross-sex hormones. And so we've got to look at these stories of these young girls. And I'm on that path where I agree. Teenage girls should not be on social media. This is what happens. In fact, many women, many adults, male and female, shouldn't be on social media. Sure, we can talk about how it's connected people, but at the same time, are we talking about the real psychological impact it's having on people? I remember just a few months ago, you may recall, Adele has gone through this massive weight loss. She's a well-known singer from the UK, beautifully trained voice. She's received major criticism for having lost weight. People would say she's better fat, or she's fat-shaming people by sharing her photos of being skinny suddenly. Lady Gaga is another person, the singer, songwriter Lady Gaga. They've criticized her publicly. People hate accomplishments. We're like crabs, where a crab starts to climb out of the box and they're able to make their way out. Next thing you know, all the other crabs start pulling that crab down because no one can get out. No one can be better than. We can't handle ourselves. This is what we're doing to these girls. Lana Del Rey is another example. She posted something a couple months ago about a great accomplishment she made. The first comment on her social media post, photo of herself, was someone just saying, "You look fat." First comment. This is a real problem of social media and social influence. Teenagers cannot decipher the trolls and the lies from the truth. It's destroying their sense of self-esteem. It's impacting their overall mental health. Mental health disorders are contagious. Look at some of the studies having to do with anorexia. Look at some of the studies having to do with transgender hordes of girls becoming all of a sudden quote-unquote boys together. They encourage one another. You can't even put an anorexic girl with another anorexic girl in a psychiatric ward or in a medical institution, because if they're next to each other, they're just going to keep encouraging each other to lose weight. Social influence is destroying young girls today. And I'm not just saying media is bad, you should get rid of your TV, you should get rid of your iPhone. What I'm saying is that we do need to wake up and we need to make some decisions. Because the bottom line is this. With regard to the transgender issue, most kids grow out of gender dysphoria. We're looking at statistics showing that upwards of 9 out of 10 kids who experience some form of gender dysphoria, by the time they've gone through puberty, as they continue to develop, end up, it totally goes away on its own without even any so-called treatment. There's another problem with this universal care approach of Western countries, where someone suddenly says that they identify as something other than their biological sex. Laws have been passed in many of the Western countries that enforce that you have to give affirmative care in both the medical in psychiatric fields to whatever that person says they identify as, not what their biology actually says. In fact, in the UK, we know of medical doctors who are getting in trouble for insisting on treating biological male or biological female patients as what they actually are biologically. But how do you treat someone when their body parts are literally created in a different way than you're being told to treat them? It used to be that transgenderism was predominant among boys, but this is changing to an increase in girls coming out as transgender. Girls are being influenced by social media and social pressure. We do not know the long-term impact that this testosterone experiment will have. There's no oversight, no knowledge of long-term side effects. The only knowledge we have are some ideas, and those ideas of the negative impact that testosterone has had has been long-term, life-changing, and irreversible. Girls deserve better. We can't say that loudly enough. These girls really, truly deserve better than what they are being given through this transgender trend that will come and go. We need to talk about the beauty of femininity, the value of women, and affirm girls as they are, not by telling them that they need to be something else other than who they really are. I'll be out tomorrow. Joining you will be Father Matthew, the former host of St. Joseph's Workshop.
Day 23, Virgin Most Faithful, pray for us. Semper Fidelis, always faithful. That's the inspiring motto of the United States Marines, who are faithful to country, ready to serve and defend our country to the point of death. The Blessed Mother is always faithful to God, always faithful to Jesus, always ready to stand by Him in the hour of His greatest need. When all of the apostles have fled, except the youngest one, John, Mary is there next to Jesus on the cross, close to Jesus to the last. At the most humiliating moment in the life of Jesus, when it looked like His entire life had been a complete and utter failure, our Blessed Mother did not hesitate to stand at His side. A faithful woman makes her husband strong, and a faithful husband will never tolerate the least bit of disrespect for his wife. Virgin Most Faithful, pray for the Church and our nation.